Welcome to the Money Insights Podcast, where high income earners go to learn wealth building strategies that will take them from high income to high net worth.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Money Insights Podcast. We talk all things money and business. I'm your host, Christian Allen. With me on the other line, as always, Rod the Pod. Rod, I can't decide whether I like Rodney the Pod Zabriskie or Rod the Pod. I mean, obviously Rod and Pod go together.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that just likes to say your full name. So anyway, I'm going back and forth on it. But Rod the Pod for today.
I'll respond to whichever you go with. How's that?
Okay. So today, Rod, we have another really good interview in our Insider series. So this is John Foley. He's been a client of ours for maybe 4 years-ish. Does that sound about right?
That's right.
And like we were just talking about, Rod, you mentioned that he's a local, which means he's in Utah. And that's unique for us. We don't usually get the chance to talk to people who are local. And so, yeah, that's kind of fun. Rod gets the pleasure of going to hang out with him at his office here and there.
Yep. He prefers to meet in person on a lot of these. And so, like you said, of all the clients we have, he is one of the only lucky guys that gets to see us in person.
I'm sure he feels really lucky. No, he's great. We're lucky to have him as a client. And John hasn't only been successful as a physician. He's been incredibly successful both as a physician and as an entrepreneur, business owner. And so it was really cool, I thought, in this interview to have a chance to kind of hear some of his thoughts and gain some of the wisdom he's gained over the last 30 years of entrepreneurial business ventures.
Absolutely. So maybe let's give everybody just a quick bio of John, what to expect. So he is a neurologist and researcher. So he, and he talked about this a little bit in the interview of what he's doing there with his clinic, and he gets to still work with patients, but he does a lot with research, and he's really on the cutting edge as it relates to bringing the digital medicine to specifically his focus, which is multiple sclerosis. So he lives here in Utah, did his residency at the University of Utah, although prior to that he was in Wisconsin. So Midwest guy that ended up moving here in the Intermountain West, and
he's stuck.
Been here ever since. Yep.
So one of the things that stood out to me, and this isn't just in the interview, this is just always, one of the things I love about John is he cares. You can tell that he just cares, right? He cares about the people that he works with, his patients, he just cares. And so he's just been such a pleasure to work with, and we appreciate the time he spent with us. So without further ado, Rod, why don't we head into the interview with John Foley?
Deal.
Okay, we are super excited to have John Foley on the podcast with us today. John, thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. And thanks so much for inviting me. I really enjoy talking with both of you guys.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. As people listening already know, John's been a long-term client. He's been ultra successful, and he has a lot of wisdom to share. So we're excited to get a chance to dive in. And I think I want to start, John, by just kind of learning a little bit more about your background, kind of jumping into that. So because people don't know you yet necessarily, can you just give us a little bit of your background? And I would love to hear kind of about your career and those kinds of aspects as well.
Absolutely, Christian. So I am a neurologist by trade. I specialize in MS, and sort of over the years of working a lot of 80 to 100 hour weeks, I have actually branched out into doing a number of different things in digital health. We are really trying to provide an environment where we don't just help patients one by one, but actually provide tools that practitioners can use in a broader sense. And so I did start a couple of companies where we are interacting with digital tools and even something called digital therapeutics, which are things that can be done over a computer that actually we hope will help with people's lives and make them better. So that's all really exciting.
Nice.
And I'm still seeing patients 2-3 days a week. I think seeing patients helps keep me grounded in what's important, and it really is fun to watch people get better, or at least in my profession, stay stable.
Yeah,
John, you may not remember this because it's probably been a couple of years since we talked about it, but I actually have a brother-in-law who is one of your patients, and he and his wife have just always had nothing but good things to say about your bedside manner and just the way that you interact with them. And anyway, so that's
cool. I didn't remember that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rod. Yeah, no, that is true. And I think it's like in business too. If you keep your goals centered on the patient or the client in a business environment, mm-hmm. that's always going to be the road to success, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
good advice. So, John, before we get too far forward, I want to just, how did you get into the medical field? What kind of drove you to getting into the medical space and field, and how did you end up there?
Well, that's a good question. I always did want to become a doctor. I mean, I know it sounds a little bit pat and, something that everyone says, but I, even from a young age, I think the human body really intrigued me, mm-hmm. and the physiology of how things work. I like to understand better how things work and build new things. And to some degree, you have to have a certain amount of a basic understanding of whatever field it is that you're going to get in to really understand where the challenges, roadblocks, and detours are to success and to try and figure out a way around those. And for instance, in my field, in multiple sclerosis, from the time that I started as a newbie doctor to now, there's just been massive, massive improvement in what we can do for people. Mm. And that's really very, very exciting.
So is it fair to say that so you have multiple businesses now doing, kind of various things that all kind of mesh together, it seems like. But is it fair to say that that some of that kind of success in helping people has been just in investing in like technology, investing in new things, like being kind of trying to be on the cutting edge? Is that a part of what you're saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we feel like as a practice, we've stayed very much on the cutting edge. We're involved in a significant amount of research in the field. And we really have tried to bring new things forward. One recent undertaking has been to try and actually build a digital MS clinic to help clinicians, not replace clinicians, but to help clinicians that maybe don't spend full time in the area of MS better provide them with tools that can give them a better understanding of how well the patient is doing. And that's been really exciting as well.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
I've always appreciated, John, how passionate you are about your work. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of how you manage to get... So you own multiple businesses now. Did you always have the entrepreneurial kind of leadership bug part of you? I mean, obviously you said you wanted to be a physician, but how did you move from wanting to be a physician to now, growing some successful companies?
Well... Yeah, there's quite a trick to that, actually.
If it was easy, a lot of people would do it.
In medical school, they teach you nothing about actually even owning and operating a practice or starting any other ancillary concerns.
Yeah.
It's all learning on the fly. And I will say I've always been really interested in leadership and business and building things that can help patients but that portion of it is never really taught. And so it really does require a lot of reading and a lot of going to seminars and surrounding your people, yourself with people that understand better the sub areas of interest. And I'm sure we'll come to the investing side of things, but I consider myself really a sub specialist, and I like dealing with sub specialists in the financial world as well, because I will never know as much as they know about that particular granular issue.
Mm. Yeah, and that's probably good advice to people in general, right? Go to people who are specialized and know things well, and generally speaking, you get better advice.
Yeah, I've certainly learned that over time. I look at the profit margins of some of these investment advisory companies compared to how much the client who's actually participating with their investment advisor makes, where the client is hoping a great year is 8% and the investment advisory is doing 40% a year. That always has been a little bit disconcerting to me.
Yeah, and that's especially true when you kind of get into like that hedge fund world and stuff like that. Well, so that's a good transition for us, John, because we obviously talk a lot about the difference between what we classify as traditional versus alternative type investing. Traditional being the things that we commonly think of, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and qualified plans. And Rod and I try to be really clear that we don't look at those things as negative things. They can be really helpful and impactful in given situations. And yet, what we generally teach people and help people move toward is that non-traditional or the alternative world. So I'm just curious, John. So I know we've been working together for maybe 4 or 5 years, something like that. But how did you kind of get moved into from that traditional world over to this, you know, kind of getting into the types of things that we often talk about, real estate and the types of life insurance policies that we use, those types of things?
Well, I think partly it was just a lack of satisfaction I tried a couple of investment advisors who I didn't really think had a very good grasp of economics in general, and who really were really making more money from me than I was making from my investments.
You're like, wait a minute. It's not quite supposed to be that way. Like, we're okay with people making money, but it's got to be in line.
They have to earn it. Yeah.
Right. They have to earn it. And you know, I think that having the right team around you of people helping you is enormously important. And I just think that there are a lot of issues that are coming up with how much debt this country's in and what the inflation rates are going to be, mm-hmm. and what the taxation rates are going to be, that one wants to pay a lot of attention to how you invest the money you have, because it certainly is easy to lose it. And some of the younger investors have never been around really negative times. So I try and take all of those factors into account. And I think in some ways I like investing in real things like real estate as well. Not that the stock market, I mean, in certain avenues, and I'm sure we'll get into this, if there's upside, I'm happy to participate. But I want to participate more with a product like yours, than just a general stock market participation.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, the focus for us is just adding additional profitability to investing that people already do in most cases, right? So sure. If you're a real estate investor, our goal is to just make the real estate investing work in a more impactful way. And so I think that's kind of, that's why we've worked together, is because our kind of overall goals and strategies generally have lined up with yours. And so it's been really good that way. Okay, John, one of the things that's really hard for people as they try to build wealth is taxation, right? Taxes are a huge deal. And you talked about several elements to why we're, you know, taxes are probably more likely to increase than decrease. We talk about the national debt and Social Security and, you know, all sorts of things that are kind of challenging. But from a tax standpoint, what has changed as you've tried to build wealth? I mean, have you had to make adjustments? Have you had to consider the tax situation more? You know, what's been the mindset as your business has grown, as you've accumulated greater wealth from a tax standpoint?
Well, I think from a tax standpoint, I mean, it's something that one always wants to pay attention to. And I think you guys have said it on other podcasts too. I mean, the government and my accountant is a firm believer in the concept that the government incentivizes us to do to have certain behaviors. And so following what the government wants us to do oftentimes will result in a lower taxable situation. I think the other real important thing in my mind is how can I protect myself against sort of a more forbidding tax environment, which certainly, I mean, as we're talking about right now, we're looking at potential massive increases in taxation. How can we protect ourselves from things like that into the future? And certainly your index universal life policy is just the optimal vehicle in my mind to do that with. And one of the reasons I really, really like working with you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for saying that, John. We appreciate it. Okay, I have a tough question. I'm going to put you on the spot just a little bit. So you've done a lot of things so well. But what would you, if you could go back 20 years, what would you maybe tell yourself or do differently to help yourself get to your goals maybe even quicker?
More financial education and really understanding better the way the world really works. As I said, we're very focused on sort of specialty education, right? And you go through 4 years of college, 4 years of medical school, 4 years of residency, and you never learn anything about actually running a practice or taking care of people in a way that is sustainable. It's really pretty remarkable to me.
Yeah. Well, so how do you balance the having both or multiple businesses and seeing patients and like all of those things? It's remarkable to me. I don't even want to get into it. I can't balance nearly as much as you can, but how have you done it?
Well, I don't sleep a lot. that's very bad.
That's the trick.
It's very important for your brain.
You're like, that's the one I'm slipping on a little bit. I know it. Know I need to do it, but
yeah. Well, you know, and I'm not a big TV watcher, so I tend to see patients during the day, and oftentimes work on other businesses at night. It's not if being an entrepreneur was easy, everyone would do it, right?
Right.
It's a lot of hours of work, no matter what.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, it's enjoyable to me, though. I really like seeing patients, and I like building tools that might help even more people. So it's fun to do, and it's a lot more fun than trying to find something on television to watch. That's for sure.
Imagine that, being productive. So, you know, I totally agree. I find that ends up being the same way I feel, and I struggle to sleep with you, John. So if you're ever bored in the middle of the night and just want to like have a conversation, shoot me an email.
I'll give you a call.
Give me a call and I'll be up waiting for it. Okay. So, John, we've worked with you on a couple of different concepts. Obviously, we use what we call the investment optimizer, what we call with Buck Joffrey, the wealth formula banking, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously that was kind of our starting line where, again, it's this idea that if I'm going to be investing and I can add a layer of profitability to the investing I'm doing, it's kind of a no-brainer. But what are some of the things that I know it's probably been, like I say, 3-4 years, but what are some of the things you've done or have you invested with the money that has gone into the wealth formula banking policy? And what does that look like for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's an essential element now to how I invest, just because, as you guys have said many times, it's a way for you actually to be kind of double dipping, right? The policy is constructed so that I can put a minimum amount, but a variable amount of money, more if I want, into the policy. And of course, the policy loans that come out are not coming out of the total amount of money I have in there. So then it's really the power in that situation of compounding interest versus simple interest, and the assumption that I can do a lot better than 5 or 6%, the 5% that the life insurance company is charging me. So I try and fund that maximally, and then I'll take it out and invest in, I guess primarily I've been investing in real estate and in syndications. And then I start to pay it back. I mean, obviously there's one has to be careful because you are taking a loan out, and you don't want that to start compounding on you too. So I try and make sure that I've paid at least the interest on the loan every year. And I usually try and pay down at least some of the principal. And then on the back end, I'm really excited about the concept of eventually having all the loans paid off and having that as another potential source of income where I can borrow from that in retirement. So for me, it's just the perfect vehicle. And, you know, I think we haven't talked really much about the index plan, but I think both plans, you know, people certainly have argued about the costs of life insurance, but I think when you average it out over the life of the plans, well, I think Rod has come up with a number of around 80 basis points, at least for the indexed universal life plan. And I mean, that to me is very reasonable and a lot better than I can do talking to an investment advisor. So no, I really have been extremely happy with everything you guys have done.
And if I can,
I was about to say, Rod, why don't you jump in and just kind of, without giving any specifics, talk a little bit about what John's alluding to.
Yeah. And the first thing I was going to say is that I can attest to John having become a student of these things, because we'll have regular conversations and he'll say to me regularly that every time I learn, it's like I'm peeling back the onion a little more each time. And so it's not that we didn't have a fair amount of conversations on the front end as we were getting this set up for him. But he just is continually learning and coming back and asking questions. And so that's been that really is what we love about what we do. Is it's not just helping people get set up with the correct type of policy, which is important, but as we get to see how people use it and have these conversations and really help people get to a point where they know it, right? That it becomes a part of the thinking that goes into their investing and the things that they're doing, because they understand it. And so that's, just wanted to throw that in there.
Well, and part of that though, Rod, is the availability of you guys to answer questions. I mean, I can pick up the phone and almost always you're answering and we can talk. And if not, you call me back and we go over things.
Yeah.
And I kind of love this peeling, because I learned little nuggets that are just, that probably you told me before, but I just missed when I was in the greater scheme of things of learning the overall plan. Like the long-term health benefits and the fact that you can actually pull that out of the ultimate amount of money that's paid out upon the death benefit. I mean, that's really kind of, you guys have set it up so nicely with these little caveats buried in the plans themselves that advantage the client, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely. No, there's definitely a lot of depth to it. And we really do focus initially anyway on really the prime benefits that we're trying to create out of it. But you're right. There are some of these kind of subsets of things that come in. Okay. So now let's talk about the strategy. So obviously you just talked about the investment optimizer side, you using that in conjunction with investing in real estate and whatnot. And then on the other side, we have what we call premium finance is the kind of the generic name of the strategy. And the whole idea here is that we are building an asset, but we're going to do it using leverage, similar to the things that we do as we invest in real estate or businesses or things like that. Using leverage, we're going to do this so that a portion of the money going into the plan is coming out of pocket, but the majority of the dollars going into the plan are coming through a loan from the bank. And so we build up this asset. It's going into an indexed universal life policy, which, as you alluded to, it grows based on what's happening in the stock market. It's not invested in the market, but it's using a market index as the measuring stick to determine how much interest you earn each year. And in a year where the market goes up, you capture a portion of those gains. In a year where the market drops, you don't participate in those losses. And in your plan, you actually get a guaranteed 1%, right? A lot of times the floor is zero, but in your particular case, it's one. So, you know, you're at a minimum, you're going to get a 1% growth on your account, even if the market was dropping.
Yeah, and psychologically, that still helps. You know, for some reason, 1% is not a lot more than 0%, but somehow in a down year, it kind of is reassuring to get my 1% at least.
Yeah,
I've only had one time so far where that kicked in, but it was still kind of nice.
Yeah. So that's kind of, we're just building this asset. Now, in addition to this insurance policy that we're creating, acting as collateral against the loan that we've created, then we also post collateral from outside, from other liquid sources. It can be a brokerage account. It can be the whole life policy. That cash value could be that asset. But eventually getting to a place where this new policy that we're creating by itself is enough to cover that collateral need. And then we just let it grow. We let it cook till this point where we then pay off the bank loan. And then from that point on, you can start accessing the funds, more source of tax-free income, another source of getting this long-term care type of benefit. And then eventually, fast forward way down the line, many, many years down the line, when the death benefit pays out, then that will go tax-free to your heirs and serve in your estate planning and all the different things that you're doing there.
Well, and just to jump in here. Oh, go ahead, John.
Well, I love the fact too that you've really stress tested the whole model on some of the worst times, like the mm-hmm. Great Depression and 1980 and all of that, and mm-hmm. it still comes out. And I think obviously it's kind of the I think you guys talked about the 2% difference between your spread, right? And what the policy loan is costing. And I do have to say, I watched this policy pretty carefully, and probably I just harass Rod with a lot of questions all the time. But I like more simulations about if I do this happens.
No, that's the beauty of it. Yeah, that's the beauty of it, is that there's a lot of flexibility built into it. And so we're great on those simulations because it helps you see. There's a little bit of a teeter-totter effect. The more a person decides to put in out of pocket, the less they have to post in outside collateral. But vice versa, if they decide to put less in and they're okay letting the collateral carry the day, then that's fine too. So,
right. In my case, I wasn't real big on the collateral, so I tried to kind of move it forward fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. And now we've gotten to the point where the policy itself internally collateralizes. But I still like the optionality of if something else happens in the year where I really have no money to invest, I can do that. Or mm-hmm. if I want to throw a little bit of money in, I have the option to do that and just reduce the loan for that year. So there's a lot of flexibility built into the policy that I just love.
Well, and it seems like you're using it like a larger, more personalized version of what we call the retirement accelerator, which is similar in that it only requires the policy's cash value to be collateral for the outside loan. And we use this, we use a term you've probably heard us, but we talk about conservative leverage. So we do believe leverage is one of the most powerful wealth building principles, strategies, tools that's available. And yet, like you alluded to, I think it's an important point that we have to be smart with it. And so we like the idea of using conservative leverage to our advantage. And that way we can't get, you know, we can't let things get out of whack.
Well, right, because we have to be tactical and strategic, right? And in this environment where we have rising inflation, I mean, that's a threat. Interest rates, it seems like it's going to be difficult for the Fed to really reduce the quantitative easing because our debt is so massive. But interest rates at some point will have to go back carrying these loans. And, you know, I think it's really part of the power of this is having the whole team, right? You guys are looking at this all the time. I'm sort of looking, and not nearly as much, but I like to watch it kind of closely as well.
Yep.
And
no one cares about your finances as much as you.
Right, right. So we can have a tactical deployment too of, you know, how are we going to deal with this? And, you know, even at the end of the 10-year stretch, which, you know, you kind of worked into your model of you need to let it grow for at least 10 years, then there's the option of letting the loan continue if you still think we're going to do better kind of with the market spread. And I really like having the option, the call option in there on the S&P, which we haven't really talked about that, but where you participate in the upside, at least the bulk of the upside, and not really the downside. So this is not your garden variety whole life insurance world.
Yeah, it's a little more sophisticated.
I kind of agree with Dave Ramsey. Garden variety life insurance, universal, I would never do. It would have to be this.
So this is probably a good question, John. 25 years ago, did you ever think that you would like life insurance as an asset class? Probably not, is my guess.
Because, you know, you get drummed into you. The propaganda is great about a whole life is ridiculous and you should only have term life insurance. Mm-hmm. And once you have enough assets, you should get rid of life insurance entirely. That's all wrong.
and I love, John's been super thoughtful. So we haven't even talked about this. I'm going to hit on it really quickly, but just to kind of create context around kind of how thoughtful John is, we have the Wealth Formula Banking / Investment Optimizer in play. We have the Premium Finance. He's actively doing things from a tax standpoint. I know that you've deployed the captive, which I know was a lot of work, but maybe just talk a little, because a lot of our listeners will be familiar with captive insurance, and you can just authentically tell us about what your experience has been like in the, you know, kind of going through and putting that together.
Well, and it wasn't a full single specialty captive. Mm. I actually went in with a number of other companies to do it because really to a great degree, because it offered some insurance coverage for things that I really could not get covered otherwise. I think the captive world is a little bit in turmoil right now, especially single captive. Mm-hmm. I know the current administration is actively trying to alter that world with new regulatory issue. So I think we're going to have to see what happens. I still feel like even group captives offer some degree of coverage against asymmetric problems or sort of so-called black swan kind of problems, mm-hmm. that can be very, very helpful. And I mean, to some degree, they are tax advantaged right now. So I think it will be very interesting to see what happens with this Congress and how that moves forward, Christian.
Yeah, those are good thoughts, interesting thoughts. Okay, well, before we call it a day, John, I'm hoping that you can tell us just a couple. So everybody likes to get, you know, people's best advice. And so I'm thinking, like, you mentioned that, and I know you do a lot of reading, but just throw out some of your favorite books or things that you've read that have been impactful for you, whether that's in business, finance, medicine, just what's been most impactful for you?
Well, I mean, and I'm sure this is not a rare thing to say, but, you know, Robert Kiyosaki's yep. Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Cash Flow, those are two books that, you know, for investing for complete neophytes, they are must reads, right? Because I ended up being very highly trained in a very specific area, but not really having enough generalist training at all in issues which were turned out to be very important, you know, financial controls and understanding mm-hmm. how to run a practice and then down the road, other businesses where we're really trying to build these tools for healthcare. And you have to start somewhere. And I think just the basic concepts in those books are just so profound that is really the place to start. And of course,
yeah.
you know, our Buck Joffrey is a good friend and friend of yep. yours as well. And he relates the story of picking up Cash Flow in some Mexican airport and it changed his life.
Yep.
I can't quite say that was the case with
me. It wasn't quite that dramatic for you.
Yeah. But it was dramatic enough that I signed up for one of Robert's seminars. And as okay. you can imagine, that was a wild thing. You know, he's up there on the stage. There's 2,000 people in the room. It's pretty crazy.
Well, and like
you know, well, you don't, you will not achieve what you cannot conceive, mm. right? If you, yeah. if it's out of your mindset, you will not accomplish it. It by definition, you mm-hmm. You have to enlarge your world of how you see things. And I mean, I think one of the best things Robert has done that for a lot of people, right? So.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's as good of a place to start as anywhere. And I think, right. I think like you said, maybe as many or more than any other book or set of books, those two books have changed a lot of people's lives. So. Well, John, it has been a pleasure to visit with you. You're amazing. We really appreciate your time, and we'll definitely have to get you on again.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been really fun, Christian and Rod. And again, I just can't. Working with your team has just been so wonderful. With people that are really, really knowledgeable about the life insurance industry and have produced products that can help people like us, you know, and it's just been really great. It took a lot of years to find you. One of my biggest regrets is not having done this 20 years earlier, right? But still, there's always time to catch up. So
that's right.
Yeah, and you've done pretty well. So with or without us, you were doing all right. Okay, thanks so much, John. We super appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, wonderful. We'll see you guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Money Insights Podcast. To learn more about the financial and business strategies discussed in this show, visit moneyinsights.net.